This is Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Cynthia Canty. It has been nearly 70 years since the last bomb fell and the last bullet was fired in World War II. But stories from that war are still being unearthed. One of those stories is told in the new book, The Secret Rescue, an untold story of American nurses and medics behind Nazi lines. It was written by my next guest, Kate Lineberry. A plane carrying nurses and medics crash-landed in Albania behind Nazi lines, and you would not believe what it took to get those Americans to safety. It's the kind of story that would make a powerful movie, but it's been largely hidden and unknown all these years. And figuring in this story are five nurses and medics from Michigan. Author Kate Lineberry joins us now from WWNO in New Orleans. Hi, Kate.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you. Before we talk about just what happened to this particular medical team and why they needed to be rescued, Kate, tell us about the Medical Air Evacuation Transport Squadron that these nurses and medics were a part of. What was their mission and why was it so groundbreaking?
Sure. Up until that point in 1942, the Army was relying a lot on getting wounded and sick patients to more fully equipped hospitals through trains or through ships. And the process was often slow. So often along the way, we lost a lot of men. This idea of medical air evacuation was to get the wounded and sick to hospitals using planes. So it was a much faster process. So it started in late 1942. And by the end of the war, they had transported over more than a million wounded and sick patients. And only 46 of them died en route.
That is quite a record. And I'm sure it was very groundbreaking because the idea of air travel wasn't something everybody was totally comfortable with, was it?
That's true. In fact, Roosevelt was the first president who actually flew on a plane during official business. And it was still very new to a lot of people, and most people had not been on planes. So often the times that the men who were wounded and sick were transported on these planes was their first time being airbound. And the idea of having nurses was also groundbreaking. Up until that point, flight nurses had not been used. And the airlines, interestingly enough, in the 1930s had realized that having nurses on board helped calm nervous passengers. So they required all their stewardesses to be nurses. And so that when medical air evacuation came around in the 40s, the flight nurses was a big groundbreaking component of that.
So on this flight, it was the 807th stationed in Sicily in 1943.
Correct.
And correct me if I'm wrong, this is about the time the Allies were really trying to shove Hitler out of Italy and out of the Adriatic. So there was a lot of fierce fighting going on.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, it was in September that Italy surrendered to the Allies. And so the Germans had moved into northern Italy, and the Allies were trying to make their way up through through southern Italy. So they were kind of wherever they were finding each other and fighting, it was pretty brutal. And the medical air evacuation teams would actually go toward as close to the front lines as they could. One of the stations they went to was Bari, Italy, and that was about 70 miles from the front lines.
And so on November 8th, 1943, tell us about the flight.
Well, it had been raining for the last 3 days, and so normally one nurse and one medic would accompany a flight of patients. They would be assigned to a flight, go to that location, travel with either personnel or with supplies, then find an empty plane and bring the patients to another area. Because of the bad weather, the nurses and medics had not been able to travel at all, and so patients were piling up in Bari, Italy. And so the commanding officer of the 807th decided to send half of his squadron of medics and nurses on board one plane to help get out those patients waiting. That was the last time he did that. The two-hour flight turned into a five-hour journey. They got caught in a violent storm, were completely disoriented, and they lost communication with the station at Bari. So they were struggling in the air. They were losing gas. They were stressed. A lot of these pilots had not. Their training was very rapid, and the pilot of this plane was 22 years old. So they did the best they could in those circumstances. They thought they were on the western side of Italy. They didn't realize because of the violent storm that they had crossed the Adriatic. And when they tried to go in for a landing, they saw some planes on the field that looked like they were abandoned German planes. Uh-huh. When they got closer, they were fired upon, and they soon realized that this was a very active German airport.
Clearly not where they thought they were.
Exactly. And they managed to ascend the plane and found themselves in the pathway of two German fighter planes soon after that. So they, and of course, they were on a C-53D, which is very much like a C-47. It's a cargo transport plane. So they had no way to defend themselves. The best they could do was just duck within the cloud cover until they lost the fighter planes. And at that point, they made the decision to find a small, they found a small patch of land. They didn't know where they were, but they thought, you know, we better land as best we can now before anything else happens. And that's when they made the crash landing.
And there they were in Albania. I'm speaking with author Kate Lineberry. Her new book is The Secret Rescue, an untold story of American nurses and medics behind Nazi lines. As this flight carrying 13 nurses and 13 medics and a crew of four crash lands in Albania. And figuring in this story are five nurses and medics from Michigan. Kate, tell us about the five from Michigan, if you could.
Sure. There were three nurses and two medics that were from Michigan. Agnes Jensen was 28 years old. She was from Stanwood, Michigan. Eugene Rutkowski was from Detroit, Michigan. She was 27. And Lillian Tessina, who was nicknamed Tassie, was from Hamtramck, Michigan. She was only 22 years old.
Boy.
One of actually the youngest nurse. The youngest medic in the group was only 19, but she was the youngest nurse. Medic Lawrence Abbott was from Newaygo, Michigan, and Charles Adams was from Niles, Michigan. Abbott was 23, and Charles Adams was 21.
It's just stunning how young they are.
Yeah, and actually the ages, there was a range, too. I mean, the youngest was 19, but the oldest, it was a medic, was 36 years old. So there was a vast array of ages in this group of 30. Mm. But they were young, some of them, including the pilot, who was actually the highest-ranking officer in the group. The medics were all enlisted men.
Okay. And so there they are. They are crash landed. It is November, so winter's looming. And how did they discover they were in Albania?
Well, fortunately for them, there had been a Red Cross training school that taught some Albanian male students English. So as soon as they land the plane, they're shaken up. One of them is significantly injured in the crash, but fortunately for them, for most of them, they were okay. They were buckled in, and the pilots did an amazing job of landing. Mm. But so they get out of the plane. They look around. There's nothing around them. They're in this incredibly rugged landscape, which is most of Albania. And all of a sudden, a group of men, armed men in homemade uniforms, come running out of the woods with daggers and rifles, and they don't know what to expect. The Americans don't know if these are friendlies or not. They soon realize that one man in the group speaks English. He had learned at this Albanian vocational school is what the official name was. And he's able to communicate enough with them to explain to them that the Germans are fairly close by within a few hours of them, and they needed to get them out quickly. So without many other options, the Americans decide their best bet for food and shelter is to go with this group of Albanian men.
And certainly there's language issues, but thank goodness this one man had some English. But they were not only behind Nazi lines, they were right in the middle of an all-out civil war in Albania, weren't they?
Exactly. And it took the Americans a while to figure that out. It was the partisans were the ones who met them. There were basically two main resistance groups in Albania at the time, the partisans and then another group called the Bali Komtar or the BK. And the Americans would eventually figure out that they were at civil war. The civil war had broken out officially the week before the Americans had crash landed. It was essentially they were vying for power for who would control Albania after the war.
Hmm. So here they were, never quite sure who to trust. And a few things happened, didn't it, that kind of set the Americans in a certain sense of dis-ease, kind of a sense that they could never quite trust the Albanian villagers and partisans they encountered, including thievery.
Exactly. The first morning they awoke, they discovered that their bags had been rummaged through and a lot of their belongings had been taken. But the partisans had a very strong code. And when they confronted the man who spoke English, Hassan Gina, he did not accept that anybody had stolen anything, and he thought they were misinformed, and the Americans got the sense they should drop it. But they are eventually led to a man named Kostas Stefa, who is the main partisan who takes them through Albania for several weeks. but he is taking them away from the coast. Their goal was to get to the coast, hopefully find a boat that could take them home. That was their best evacuation plan that they could come up with. And they felt like he was taking them the opposite way. Mm-hmm. They would routinely question him about it, and his answer was always, you know, he was trying to avoid BK territory, their rivals, or there was German fighting nearby. There was always some reason. And in a couple of places in villages where the Americans were, people warned them about this man. So they weren't sure what to believe. And they really had no other choice but to trust them.
And why is it ultimately they connect with a British officer who said, why are you over here? Why did he? Is there any sense of why he did take them so far out of the way?
You know, I think it's a combination of things. Kostas Stefa was a very loyal partisan, and he had his orders, I'm sure, to help get the message out that the Americans were going to back the partisans. They felt like they had this, you know, group of Americans who proved to the villagers that they kept taking them to and introducing them to that this was the beginning of an American invasion force.
And look who's on our side.
So it was definitely part of the partisan propaganda. But at the same time, Kostas was definitely risking his life for the Americans, and his heroic actions, I think, should not be forgotten, because he was, you know, he certainly did not have to do this, and he would ultimately pay the price for this too.
Tell us what happened to him after the war.
Well, interestingly enough, when he returns, the Americans didn't know it, but when he has to leave them at one point before they're rescued, and when he returned home, he was found by the BK and tortured for several days. Mm. After the war, communism took over, and Enver Hoxha, who had been a friend of his, became the dictator. He actually had Stefa executed. And his wife, interestingly enough, is 101 years old right now. She still is with us, and she lives in Italy. And I was able to talk with the family, and although Stefa died in 1948, his memory is very much alive and well. And, you know, he left behind five children. And my book arrived. I sent them a copy of the book, and the book arrived on Eleni's 101st birthday, and she was just delighted. So that's been incredibly meaningful to me as an author to you know, sort of for them, it's seeing something, some recognition for what their husband and father did for the Americans.
And these Americans, you know, really with his guidance and some other friendly folks as they went along their journey, probably could not have been in Albania and slogging through the mountains and rough terrain at a worse time, could they?
No. November in Albania is brutally cold, and the Germans were keeping to the roads, so the Americans, with the partisans' guidance, stayed in the mountains to avoid them. It was definitely possible they would run into Germans who sent out patrols regularly, but it was much safer for them to be in the mountain terrain, and of course the temperatures plummeted, and the Americans were only wearing what they had that morning, which was a mild morning when they left Sicily, and actually three of the nurses did not have coats with them. So they encountered a couple blizzards along the way and miraculously survived, but it was not without being extremely cold and miserable.
So how long did it take to get the larger group out? How many weeks of slogging through mountains and snow and starving and not enough food and clothing? How many weeks did that take?
For the larger group, it took about 9 weeks. So the Americans had, you know, they were hungry, they'd lost weight, they were all lice-ridden, they all were suffering with gastrointestinal issues. They actually walked, the estimate is over 600 miles, and so their shoes were actually falling apart by the end of the journey.
But when they were finally handed back to the Americans, everybody recovered, and they also got the final three out after a period of time, didn't they? So basically everybody got home safely.
Yeah, it's truly miraculous to me. I mean, there were so many lucky breaks that the Americans had. You know, at one point they are trying to cross a German airfield and they have to dive into a ditch and you know, hope for their lives that they're not shot at while these planes go overhead. One of the nurses almost slips during a blizzard and falls to her death. There were so many times when something terrible could have happened, and it's miraculous to me that they all survived. And one of them actually is still alive today. He's 91 years old.
That is something. I know, and you've actually been able to make some book appearances with him, haven't you?
Yeah, he's been wonderful. He has an incredible memory, and so he was very helpful in fleshing out the background story. I really wanted to know, you know, what the relationships were like, what the struggles were like that wouldn't show up in the British reports or in any other documentation. There were, and interestingly enough, two of the people in the group actually wrote their stories when they returned. Both were from Michigan. One was Agnes Jensen, who, after communism fell in the 90s, decided that it was safe enough to tell the story now. They had never wanted to jeopardize the future of any of the Albanians who had helped them while communism was flourishing. So she went back to Albania in the mid-90s and then decided to write about it and wrote a memoir about it. And then Lawrence Abbott, who'd passed away in the 80s, his son found his long-lost memoir and self-published it in 2010. So I was very fortunate to have those documents. But when I found that Harold Hayes, the 91-year-old, was willing to really work with me on it, that's when I decided there could be a book.
What drew you to this story, and what did you learn from this group of hardy Americans as you researched it?
There were several angles to the story that really intrigued me. One was that there were 13 nurses involved. You often hear about down airmen walking back, and I had never heard about these women. And I came across a historic article about it, and it got me wondering. The other was that these were just ordinary Americans who went through just extraordinary circumstances. And to me, in a way, they represent, you know, what the average American. They were putting their lives on the line all the time, even when technically they weren't supposed to. The nurses were never supposed to be behind enemy lines. You know, the medics had not been trained for combat. These were just regular people from all over the world. Some had volunteered. Some were drafted. All the nurses were volunteers. But it was a meaningful story to me in that it was also a triumphant story. They did all survive with so many people helping them along the way. It wasn't just the partisans. It was the Albanian villagers. They went from one village to the next for 9 weeks and were always given food and shelter. If the Germans had caught those families, they would have surely been killed. And they were, you know, everybody opened their homes to them and helped. And that drew me to the story, too. It was such a positive aspect of it.
Well, for anyone who is who is a World War II buff or feels any kind of historic interest in World War II, it's great to find a story that no one has really been familiar with until now, and that's through Kate Lineberry's book, The Secret Rescue, An Untold Story of American Nurses and Medics Behind Nazi Lines. It's been great talking with you, Kate. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And if any of you listening to Kate are related to the five nurses and medics from Michigan, that's Agnes Jensen of Stanwood, Jean Rutkowski of Detroit, Lillian Tessina of Hamtramck, Lawrence Abbott of Nuevo, or Charles Adams of Niles, we would really like to hear from you. You can reach out to us through the Stateside link at michiganradio.org or go to Facebook and just search for Stateside with Cynthia Canty.